Welcome to Had to Be There, the podcast that allows you to explore the world's greatest destinations through the stories of those who have been there. Here to ignite the wanderlust within, your host and favorite travel planner, Kelly Acevedo.
Bine avenit, and welcome back to the Had to Be There podcast. I'm your host, Kelly, and this is episode 89. The weather is finally starting to warm up a little bit here in New England, which means more people are outside, taking walks, working in their gardens, cheering on the local Little League team. I totally understand the urge to get out of the house when the weather changes like this, but does anybody else get the urge to just like plan a vacation? We just went on a cruise like 2 months ago, and I'm already getting that itch to book something new. So is anybody going anywhere exciting this spring? Please come and share all about it in our Had to Be There Facebook group so that we can live vicariously through your upcoming plans. And now, my frequent flyers, please put your trays and seat backs in their upright position. I've got your things to know before you go to Romania. So, you're thinking of booking a trip to Romania. Here's what you need to know to get started. First things first, getting in is easy for most nationalities. No visa hassle for short stays, but always check the latest requirements with your Academy Travel affiliate. The currency over there is the Romanian leu, and exchanging some cash beforehand is just always a good idea. But okay, enough with the logistics. Let's dig into the fun part. All the amazing things that you can see and do in Romania. First up, how about a trip through Transylvania in search of chills and thrills? Bran Castle, which is also known as Dracula's Castle, may not have Buffy or Angel patrolling the halls, but it's still steeped in history and legend. Just imagine walking the same halls that inspired Bram Stoker's iconic vampire tale. And I just have to ask here, what school of vampire lore do you subscribe to? Are you more like Anne Rice, Interview with a Vampire, or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like me? Or are you maybe of the generation who came up with Twilight and buy into the whole Cullen's version of vampires? These are just things I need to know. So let me know. Let me know where you're at with that. But anyways, for my architecture enthusiasts, get ready to have your mind blown. Bucharest's Palace of the Parliament is the world's second biggest administrative building, and it is a sight to behold. Just think like colossal hallways, extravagant decorations, and just a sheer scale that is gonna leave you speechless. And nature lovers, don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you. Romania boasts the stunning Carpathian Mountains, which is just a hiker's paradise. So lace up your boots and explore breathtaking scenery from towering peaks to hidden valleys. And don't forget to stop by one of the charming villages along the way. You may just discover some hidden gems and experience true Romanian hospitality. And speaking of exploring, let's talk about food. Romanian cuisine is a delicious mix of influences. So you can expect hearty stews, grilled meats, and fresh veggies. Definitely try the sarmale, which is the national dish of stuffed cabbage leaves. And for dessert, papanashi is a cheese-filled donut, and they're said to be a must. Romania is a safe and welcoming country. A basic greeting in the native language goes a long way with the locals. Try saying bună ziua. That's a friendly way to say hello, good day. So have we wet your wanderlust whistle? Are you feeling inspired to explore Romania? Because you can start planning today at trips.hadtobethere.net. Up next, we're going to chat a little with this week's guest, Chungur Daniel. Chungur is a master in long-distance healing, which means he can relieve your pain and restore your health, even when he's traveling the world on his motorcycle.
The Had to Be There podcast is brought to you by Vacations by Kelly, where your host becomes your travel agent. As a proud affiliate of Academy Travel, Kelly specializes in Disney destinations and can help with all non-Disney excursions worldwide as well. When you book with Kelly, you're getting much more than a travel agent. You're getting a personalized concierge-level travel partner. And the best part? Her services are completely free. It's true. So when you're ready to make your next travel dream a reality, Vacations by Kelly is ready to make it happen. Visit hadtobethere.net/vacations to get started.
Hey, Chungur, welcome to the Had to Be There podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I can't wait to hear this story today. But before we jump in, can you introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little about you?
Yes. I was born and raised in the former Yugoslavia, in the part what would be Serbia now, in a Hungarian family.
Wow.
So, yes, I grew up with two languages and, we had open passports in Yugoslavia. We could travel. So we did. You know, Europe is not so big, and yeah. We did a lot of hitchhiking, and early on at 16, I took off on a moped with some friends.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, it was amazing, amazing times, and we had a lot of travel opportunities. No money, no cars, it was far from the American lifestyle, but, happy times.
Oh, good.
Yes.
So you've been traveling just your whole life, basically.
Yes, it was a passion then, to see other places, and our country alone was amazing. It was kind of like the United States in small. We had, mountains, we had sea, we had forests, we had flatlands, yeah. Everything. And yeah. So when I came to the States in 91, I was here also as a tourist. I came to visit my aunt and traveled around the States. But that's when the war started in Yugoslavia. And so I stayed a little bit longer to avoid being part of it. Then it kept dragging on, and I ended up staying here, eventually got married, had two beautiful daughters. Aww. And so I'm still here. However, many years after I came first, I went back to visit. Then in 99, I was invited to lecture in Scotland.
Ooh.
And that opened up a whole, wait a second, I can go and travel and get paid doing the same. And the locals show me the best places and the best of everything, the best food, the best, So since then, I've been traveling and teaching at the same time.
Living the dream, my friend.
Yes, I taught in Denmark. I taught in Berlin, in Bucharest, and all over Europe.
Wow.
Now, how can you top that?
Well,
in 2012, I sent a motorcycle to Budapest. Mm-hmm. That was the one that my cousin used when he was visiting here. We got him a motorcycle, quickly fixed it up. And he loved it so much that, I decided to keep it. So when he visits every time. But then came a period when he didn't, and I wanted to go and travel Europe on motorcycle. Now, up to that point, I was able to borrow some bikes from some friends. But I figured, listen, I'd send the bike over and do a tour, and then I'll sell it to you. So, yeah, awesome. It was a nominal fee, nothing to it. And it was pretty cheap to send it over. I mean, relatively cheap.
Sure.
About $500-$600 Wow. I don't know if it's much more expensive now, but you know, just the motorcycle, packed it up with everything. It took
that
a month
still
or
feels
so
way
for,
too cheap.
Yeah, so he took care of it. He got it, you know, home, and then 2 months later, I was there, and it was an awesome trip. Went back, sold him the bike. Then it turned out that he could not register it because it was for the American market. It didn't, you know, apply to the European standards.
Wow.
So I bought it back. And, you know, it was like, I don't think anything has changed hands, but so it became my bike again. And it has Florida license plates. In Florida, you don't have to do technical exam for vehicles every year.
Oh, okay.
They just send you the sticker as long as you pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I kept the bike there and kept it registered with the Florida plate.
Yeah.
So it's been 11 years now. And so every year, even if I do seminars, I fly to Budapest. I hang with my favorite cousins, you know, and then maybe go for a ride with them and then take the bike to wherever I teach and make an adventure out of it.
Aww.
And so I had an amazing year. This was about 6-7 years ago or so when we organized purposefully everything around riding. So with them and then without them, and then it was just a very crazy summer. First, it started with me arriving in Budapest, and the next morning, we were already packing up the dirt bikes. They had an extra one for me, and we went to Romania, about six-hour drive to Transylvania.
Yeah.
Which I pretty much slept through. I was so, you know, jet lagged and everything.
Yeah.
We went through some interesting areas, small gypsy villages with humongous palaces. You may have seen reports on it in National Geographic and such.
Yeah.
Gypsies who went out west and made amazing fortunes and came back. And it's a competition who makes the biggest palace. Nobody lives in it. Or maybe grandma in the back somewhere, you know. But, you know, you just go by and these amazing, amazing buildings.
Wow.
And then we ended up in the mountains, in the forest, in a small kind of a hotel that had its own famous restaurant. It had an indoor giant jacuzzi, the size of like 10 jacuzzis. You could kind of swim in it. And there was a special little shed just for our dirt bikes.
Oh.
And so technically, you know, you get up in the morning, put on your stuff, push your bike out on the road so you don't wake up anybody, turn it on, go 100 yards, turn left, go 100 yards, get into the creek, and continue up in the mountain, and you're gone. I don't know where I am. It's bear country.
Wow.
And so it's amazing. I mean, I killed myself. I'm not used to those. You know, I'm from flatlands here in Florida. So it took me a few hours just to get the 3D. And so that entire summer, I could probably write a book on just what happened in those 3 weeks. But these were 4 days of pure enduro pleasure. It's like going to places where you wouldn't even want to walk, and you take these dirt bikes up there. And we stopped in some small village with it had one little pub. Now the pub was smaller than this room, but outside they had a big tent next to their house and such. There were chicken and ducks and geese and whatever, and a vicious dog in the back. And, you know, we get off all dirty, wet, sweaty. It was summertime. The owner comes out with a walking stick, an older gentleman, and he only speaks Romanian. We only know 3 words in Romanian, maybe 2 sentences altogether.
Yeah.
You know how to ask for food, drinks, and whatnot. And as he, you know, went in, of course, I was with hard enduro riders right away, beer. Not used to it, but okay. It comes out the old guy with the beers in his hand again with a walking stick. And so one of the guys goes, "Hey, why don't you fix his leg while we are here?" I'm like, "Gee, I'm on vacation, but it's tough to look at him." And so now this is my profession. I've been a healer ever since I was 20. Well, wow. Since before, but I've known since I was that age.
Yeah,
I've written 3 books on the subject, and all of it. That's all what my lectures are about, of course. And so we explained to him to sit down and asked him to explain what happened to him. And it was an old sucker injury from some 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I did my energy healing work, and he was making big eyes like, "Wow, what's happening?" He's feeling stuff, you know. And so when I was done, I said, "Okay, try it out." And he was reaching for his stick. And our buddy was like, no stick, you know, just walk around. And he started walking and back and forth and big eyes and wow. And he started dancing there and went inside and came out with his wife. Now, this was a big, big woman, okay, with a big traditional dress and everything. And now she's coming out with him, bringing again full handfuls of beer, and coming and telling us like her foot,
oh,
you
God.
Know, something wrong with it. She was also walking sideways.
No.
So like, okay, so I sit down and I work on her foot. Now, this was about 11 o'clock, maybe 11:30.
Yeah.
Okay, this is early for drinking, early for anything.
Yeah.
There's already a guy behind us, kind of semi-asleep, leaning, you know, sideways on the bench. Early riser.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of semi-witnessing this whole thing. And now you see 2 people dancing there, the owner and his wife.
Oh.
And so what else can we, you know, bring you? I said, no, we're, you know, good. That's already too much for me. I said, where can I fill up my water thing? I had a backpack, this Camelback.
Yeah.
I said, can I do it there? No, you come with me. And so we go by the past the vicious dog, past the duck skis, whatever. Go in the backyard, beautiful garden, and there's a well in the middle of it. And he opens the top and reaches down, pulls out this water. I mean, I had questions. Do I want diarrhea for the next few days or not? Or who knows? But it was so beautiful and so sweet and cold, ice cold. And of course, I filled it up. And I said, "Oh, thank you." And I started walking back. I said, no. And to follow him. And now we go into this house, his house.
Oh boy.
and he's showing me the house and pictures and whatnot. And then we go to the back, and there was a tiny little room from floor to ceiling full of homemade brandy.
Oh my gosh.
He says, "You got to try this." Oh my, you know, I can't, you know, I can't drink. No, you got to have it, you know. And so, okay. All right, let's have one. You know, we have it. And of course, it burns all the way down. It was It was good. Really good stuff. But no, now you got to try this one. It's better.
Oh my God.
So about 3-4 like that. And we go outside. Well, by that time, the table was full of beer. The old lady just kept bringing it out.
Oh.
And so they sat down and somehow through sign language explained to choose which duck we would like for tomorrow for them to prepare for us.
Oh.
And so by then we said, "Okay, guys, let's just go," you know, because pretty soon, like, there were people gathering, you know, I'm on vacation. Let's not
Yeah, so not like forming a line. I have this ingrown nail, and
but I mean, it was really 3 days of hard work, and then we would go back and ride in, turn the engines off, roll into the shed, and take off our clothes, put on our bathing suit right there, and go straight into the jacuzzi. And just like that.
Yeah.
It should be an ice bath, but who cares, you know? It was beautiful. And then we'd go to the restaurant and they would prepare our favorite, whatever we wanted. And they had desserts. And then just it was all in one package. We didn't have to go anywhere, even though we were gone all day.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And then we went back to Budapest. And then my real trip started. Which I had to go to back to Romania, to Bucharest, the other end of Romania, to do a seminar. I taught a big seminar, I had 40 students for it. Everything was preset, but I gave myself 3 days or four to tour parts of Romania where I hadn't been yet.
Yeah,
my ancestors were from that area. It was it was still Hungary at the time.
Yeah.
And I found out that it was like blue-blooded ancestors, and like, okay, let's see that area. And it was up in the mountains and very close to the Transalpina road, which is one of their, they have two high alpine roads that go across the Carpathian Mountains. One is the Transfigurecen, the other one is the Transalpina. I've gone on the Transfigurecen before, and I did it later too. I've never seen it in sunshine. It was always raining or snowing.
Oh no.
The Transalpina was so amazing. I went first to visit a friend, a former student, and stayed with him one night in Cluj, in which is Kolozsvár in Hungarian. And then from there, I found my way to the Transalpina. And I don't think I saw two cars and a few motorcycles on the entire road. And there was one little tiny little shack that had some food and finally coffee. And I was just looking for, I got that low caffeine level, you know, and I pulled over, and it was perfect timing because I don't know, like a few hundred sheep went by with those giant sheep dogs they have up there, and there were a bunch of bikers, so I mingled with them a little bit, sat down, some spoke English, and you know, where did you guys come from? Like Poland. Wow, that's quite a trip, you know. Like yeah, where'd you come from? Florida. And so I did the entire length, and it's amazing curves that we were looking for, you know, perfect surface, perfect curves, and perfect view.
Yeah.
And the entire touristy thing was, you know, a few stands on the top selling cheese and honey and rocks. They had these local geo whatever they call them.
Yeah.
And very friendly people, huge dogs, you know, but none of them ate me. amazing scenery, some snow. And again, after one curve, I ran into another, you know, bunch of sheep. You know, cool videos and such.
Yeah.
And then in a roundabout way, I found the town where my grandfather was from, and stayed the night. And, you know, the plan was like, hey, I have a whole day. Bucharest is only half a day away. And I'll go back on the Transfigurecen on this funky, curvy road. Awesome. And now this is all by myself, right? Packed up motorcycle. For those who are interested in it, it's a Yamaha FZ1. It's 20 years old.
Wow.
It's set up for touring, so it's relatively comfortable, very fast. And so I start out, and the first 2 miles are okay. Next thing I know, oops. All of a sudden, I mean, I the GPS shows the road, but there's no asphalt. No. Like, all right, maybe there's a section they're fixing.
Oh, I
keep going. Now there's barely any flat surface, you know, it just it rots in and out.
Oh,
it's wide, but, you know, it felt like being in Alaska somewhere, totally lost in the wilderness.
Wow.
You're just waiting for the bears to run out.
Right, right.
And this was for a good half an hour. And, of course, I didn't know this was one of the, you know, first of many such excursions in Romania on that exact bike, where you would only take a dirt bike, but somehow you end up there. But I did find back the way back on the Transalpina and continued to Bucharest.
Wow.
Now, the whole this how should I put this? It has a lot of philosophical meanings here. You know what we met and how the people live up there. There's still okay. villages where there's no electricity, no running
wow.
water, no nothing. But yes. they have everything. They have fresh water.
Yeah.
They have cows, they have sheep, they have fresh milk, they make their own bread. They
yeah.
once in a while go in the city to get the newest Nikes or whatever, but they have no TV and they live this simple but so amazing and healthy life and happy life.
Yeah.
There was a program about one of the last villages, you know, still without electricity. And first about how their lives are, and really mm-hmm. tranquil, just amazing. No stress whatsoever.
Wow.
And
that sounds nice.
Like, well, we're getting electricity. So what are you going to do? Well, we'll probably get a TV. And what's going to happen then? Well, we'll probably all stay home and watch TV, you know, and they predicted their demise, you know. Now, When you go by that area, Transylvania and such, everything is ultra green, ultra beautiful.
Yeah.
But many bad roads. So it's getting better. But still, and then you see some trash on some areas and such. But this part was somehow special to me. I figured, well, I'm somewhere from here, you know. And driving around, I was just immersed in this beauty. It was the perfect
yeah.
curves, the perfect everything. And I was in between some little villages. And every time you ride through a village, every kid who's out there, they're showing you, you know, so you give them
oh,
a few, hit the gas,
cute.
And it's a pretty loud bike and everybody's happy.
So,
and every dog runs after you, of course, and such. But it was just this moment of like, wow, this is so cool here. And I went over this ridge into a curve. And from the opposite direction, there was an old, like a horse and carriage. Old horse, old carriage, an old guy on it. And very slowly, just, you know, very slowly going on the road. And I could see, I mean, from the area and what was around, he's definitely going out to pick up hay or something, some kind of a hay work.
Right.
And there was no hurry, of course. And as we went by, now this happens many times with bikers, you know, you wave to each other or something.
Yeah.
But this time, you know, he's not a biker. We were not waving, but our eyes met. And in that moment, I could envision, like, see his entire existence, his life. And it was all just this tranquility.
Wow.
And then I got into, went through his village. I mean, the village from this, which direction he was coming.
Yeah.
And as I was passing by, you know, I see everything's clean, everything is tranquil. A small little, you know, nice, very nice entrances, big gates carved
yeah.
out and such. And it went through my head like, well, maybe he's never left this village in his life. he met his, you know, first love there, married her, got a bunch of kids. I got a bunch of grandkids. Everybody gets together for everything, breakfast, lunch, dinner, big activities, holidays. You know, once in a while you have to pick up the shit, but it's part of the village life. You know, that same thing will become your next tomato or whatnot. Everything is natural. They live with nature. There was nothing artificial there. And absolutely no reason to stress. And it was like this, like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's how I went into, you know, this busy Bucharest and went in to do my seminar and such. So yes, it's wherever you go, you know, if you observe people, you know, it's especially the ones who had been in the same area for generations. Mm. You know, some people may have that desire to go like I did. Or some people leave because of economic reasons or war or other stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are these happy areas where for generations and generations, it was the same. And my hometown partially stayed like that. So when I go there, I still see the same people, you know, sometimes by the same cafes, same tables, listening to the same music, drinking the same beer or coffee or whatnot. It's again a tranquil feeling, you know. Many of them, they don't even know it. It's just part of the life,
right.
But Europe in general is very friendly wherever you go.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the second morning already, going to the same cafe to have coffee in Florence, Italy, they already knew what I was having. The third morning, we were like best friends. But it happens many other places. So it's amazing.
I love it. Yeah. And this region, this like Romania and this area, we haven't touched on yet on the show. So thank you so much for sharing all of this.
This summer, I went with my oldest daughter. I took her many times to Europe on motorcycle trips, and she's 26 now, and it's still a wonder she wants to come with me. So it was awesome. We went, of course, to Budapest to hop on the bike, went down to Serbia, visit my mom, family, friends. It was actually the biggest heat wave in Europe, so it was pretty tough on the bike.
Yeah.
And it broke down a couple of times, had to fix it. Ooh. It was one of those mystery breakdowns, but everything was fine. After all these years, I know every screw on that bike.
I'm sure.
And we did a short trip with a cousin and his wife on two motorcycles. We went down from Serbia, down to southern Serbia. From there through Montenegro down to the Adriatic to Dubrovnik, and went down back to Bosnia to Mostar.
Yeah.
If you know that arched bridge, very famous. Right. And then from there back up to Serbia and back to Budapest.
Man, that's a trek.
We dodged two huge storms, one within 10 minutes, one within a few hours. Big hailstorms. They were just going through Europe. And we went by one forest fire, all in that 4-day trip. But somehow the weather was always nice for us. We got lucky.
Yeah.
But it's incredible. Anywhere in the Balkans, you will just run into two very friendly people.
Yeah.
Anywhere in Europe, people will speak English now, at least a few words, so it's not a big deal.
Right.
But if you know a few sentences in the local language, you have the best points. And always when they see the effort, you know, they want to help you.
Right.
So it's always, I would start with the cleanest buongiorno and you know, and then capisco l'inglese.
Right.
And then they go, okay.
Exactly. Why do you think that more people should have Romania and that area on their bucket lists?
Well, it has, I guess, per territory, the largest untouched nature, and it's beautiful, green. It's very affordable. And Bucharest is a little bit more expensive, like any capital in Europe.
Sure, yeah.
But the rest of the country is very accessible, affordable, friendly. The food is amazing. A good espresso everywhere. So just it's a lovely country. I would avoid the south. It's quite kind of flat and it can be boring. But around Transylvania and all the Carpathians, just incredible.
Amazing. So
all the surrounding countries are similar. You know, Hungary doesn't have the highlands like Romania does. Mm-hmm. In Serbia, you'll find some similar areas. You'll be looking for something else in Serbia or something else in Montenegro. Montenegro, by the way, for my biker buddies out there, it has the best roads now and the best curves and the best view, and just watch out. Yes.
I would love to hear about some of these other places that you have visited. Would you like to play Passport Picks?
Sure, go for it. Tell us your favorite from all your trips. It's time to play Passport Picks.
Passport Picks. Do you know offhand how many different countries that you've visited in your lifetime?
I don't know. Between 30 and 50?
So, okay.
It's really wide. I never really counted. I don't know.
But I find that that's the case. Either people know like exactly how many or no idea.
I touched four continents, but barely. You know, the world is so big. I had the enthusiasm when I was younger, but I didn't have the guts. I didn't have the means, you know, to just take off on motorcycle and go around the world. Yeah. And now I like to sleep on more comfortable beds and forget about camping and such.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a favorite souvenir or keepsake that you've collected along your travels?
You know, I'm on motorcycle, so I can't carry big stuff. But 2 years in a row, I carried a giant wooden spoon that I got in Serbia at the market.
Yeah.
And I had to attach it on the bike on the outside because it wouldn't fit in any of the bags. And first year, I took it all around the Alps and Switzerland and Italy.
Oh, God.
And nobody stole it. I never took it off.
Wow.
It even had the markings of the rubber holding it. And then this past winter, I cooked some chicken paprikash at home, and I forgot the spoon outside, you know, out in a big kettle, and put the spoon on the top, and the visitor's dog ate it.
Oh,
and
no.
So this year I brought another one the same way.
That's so funny.
I thought it was a cool souvenir. I should carve in what countries it went through and such.
Right. So you mentioned traveling with your biker friends and with your daughter. Do you have a favorite travel companion?
Ooh, all of them are my favorite. You know, everybody brings something else to it.
I love all my children equally. Okay.
With my kids, it's always a total pleasure.
Yeah.
It's just they're totally in for everything. You want to eat? Sure. You want to drink? Sure. You want to pee? Sure. You know, hey, stop here. Look at it. Yeah, sure. They're totally into it. They love the travel.
Oh.
My latest favorite is my fiance, who never really went on any long motorcycle trips. And so took her on some short ones, and then we did a short North Carolina trip, you know, just 5-6 days, but no more than 4 or 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then last year it was the big tryout. I mean, we did the thing. We flew to Budapest, and we hopped on the bike. And first day we went to Graz, Austria. I mean, first day we stayed in Budapest and relaxed with my cousin. Sure. Then we left together. He had to go to Italy. And so we went together to near Graz, and we separated. And then by the time we got to Graz, by the time she started, you know, feeling it and complaining and such, yeah. We got to this awesome hotel, this, you know, 18th century built with these giant ceilings. And the bathroom was the size of my living room, you know, wow. Amazing. And then, you know, being in the middle of the old town and this life and, you know, just this European energy, yeah. and eat outside and see the crowd go by, you know, just poof, you know, the energy came back.
Yeah.
And then we continued like that, and we went to Salzburg the next day, and then even more of that, you know, yeah. and then next day we went up high in the Alps, and I taught there for a week. Mm-hmm. In an amazing place, far from the tourists, but in the most tranquil, you know, famous ski areas. But in the summer, it's nice and empty and yeah. green. And so she was hooked. Then on the way down, we stopped in Italy, see my cousin, then stopped in another place. First Switzerland, of course. Then ended up in Ljubljana in Slovenia, which is a whole another story. All of Slovenia and especially Ljubljana, I recommend to everyone.
Wow.
Just amazing everything from the crowds, the people, the view, the city, the food. Just it's like being in Austria. Everything is clean, everything is green, but with Balkans mentality. It was part of Yugoslavia, you know, and then they separated first. So you know, you get best of everything.
Yeah.
And so that would probably be our all-time favorite place, or at least ours together. Yeah. And mine as well. I served in the military there as well, but it wasn't as much fun as now.
Wow.
So, yes. It's Slovenia is a very small country. But yeah. In the same day, imagine you could be skiing in a mountain, and then 2 hours later, you could be swimming in the Adriatic. Think about that.
Oh my gosh. That's so wild to think about. Which destination that you visited has had the best arts scene?
I mean, I like all the, you know, as far as museums go, like New York City, London, you know, blows your mind. But if you go to Vienna, the entire city is a big art museum. The building yeah. inside out, everything is art. The gardens are art. Of yeah. course, you run into places in Scotland where when it's some flower festival and every house is full of flowers and such.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I mean, that's kind of, you know, art in a way, but
yeah.
I'm not sure. This is a tough question. Yeah. It's very tough.
Those are good answers, though. Do you have a favorite travel tip or a hack that you could share with us?
By the way, Florence, Italy. Yeah, art. blows your mind. Get your tickets ahead of time. Don't stand in line. That's my quick one on that.
That's a good tip.
But that's also, you can't be more artsy than that. That's the top.
That's I true. Think.
Yes. I almost forgot. Jeez. So travel hack. I think yeah. I mentioned my favorite one is wherever I go, I try to learn the language for at least 2 months before I go there. If it's a planned vacation. So, yeah. you know, at least to know how to order some food, where's the bathroom, which direction to go through, where is my fiance, you know, and such, who stole my motorcycle, and those help a lot. Of course, when I went to Moscow, it was a day long drinking with the locals, and then finally when we get to this amazing club, okay, man, from now on you gotta speak English. Like, why? Otherwise they don't let you in. Look at you. You know, I was still in the same clothes I flew in, and you speak English. Yeah, it's no problem. Very exclusive. So why did I learn Russian? He goes, I don't know. Everybody speaks English here. You know?
That's very funny. is there anything that's still at the top of your bucket list that you haven't been able to cross off yet?
A lot. And the problem is that many of the places that were never on my bucket list turned out to be so awesome that I had to rethink that given bucket list.
Yeah.
You know, like, I never in my life thought I would go to Scotland. I mean, who wants to go? It's cold, wet. I don't know. And it was one of the most amazing experiences in countries and places that I've ever seen.
Wow.
So after that, everything was like that. I'd like to go to Albania, and I will sooner or later. I heard a lot of good things about it. It was so closed in and behind an iron curtain in a way for many years. And all we knew that they had, you know, millions of bunkers, but that was it. And they have tranquil beaches and such supposed to be beautiful, cheap, and delicious.
I love it.
I'd like to see Japan. I don't know if I'd do it on motorcycle. You know, I still have that motorcycle set up in my mind.
Yeah.
Scandinavia, other places, Norway, and I've been to parts of Sweden and Denmark. Absolutely gorgeous. Go in the summer, never in the winter.
That's fair.
Just many places in South America, Central America. I'm open to pretty much anywhere. And I still get people ask me if I would come here or there to teach. If you organize it, I'm coming. If it's in Papua New Guinea, I'm going. You know, wherever it is, why not?
That's a great attitude.
Yes. And you know, if I can't take my bike, I can rent one.
That's true.
I've gone through Colorado like that on a rented motorcycle. It's too far to ride from here. I'm probably too boring, too flat, and too little time.
That's true. Right in the middle there's a lot of
A couple of years ago, my fiance surprised me with a trip to Key West. We took a boat to Key West, and they have scooters there, and we rented a scooter.
Yeah.
I had more fun on it than I would have had on a motorcycle if I were there on it. I mean, you can do it with one hand and the other hand a coconut and go around. It's also another amazing place. Yes.
Incredible. So you mentioned a couple of times your work and teachings as a healer. How did you tap into this? How did this all start for you?
I was an engineering student, nothing to do with it.
Oh, wow.
A family friend was visiting, my dad's good friend, and he was talking about this energy. And my dad was quite skeptical, but I overheard them and went there to see what is he talking about. And he says, yeah, you know, this energy, you can feel it between your hands. And I'm like, well, I kind of felt this my whole life. I just didn't know what it was. And he explained it to me, and one thing led to another. I started stopping pain, and I mean, it was still like hobby level because nobody was teaching this. I didn't even know exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But I was doing experiments. I was able to stop headaches or, you know, my buddy's ankle pain and such. And then one day my mom's back was hurting, and I I stood behind her and I kind of visualized pulling this pain out, this excess energy out. And as I pulled my hand back, my mom started moving back. Like, what? I put my hand forward, my mom goes back. I pull my hand back, my mom leans back. Like, Mom, what are you doing? She says, nothing, what are you doing? Like, gee, I realized I could move her without touching her. Wow. And so now what do you do with that? You know, this is like Superman powers. What, you know, what's...
Did you feel like that was super counterintuitive from being an engineering student?
I mean, I don't know. My mom was an art teacher. My dad was a chemical engineer. My uncle was a mechanical engineer. My grandfather was a famous artist. I was in between, so I was open to anything. But I liked logic, and I needed everything to be explainable. And here I am, like, feeling stuff. And so what do you do with this power?
Right.
You go out to the pub, tell your buddies, like, hey, sure. what happened to me? And they're like, yeah, right, you know. And so I'm like, well, let me try on you. And so I moved him. And the next one, I pulled him back. Next one, I pushed him forward. By the end of the night, we were betting in beer who's going to move, who's not. And that's how my healing career started. Thank you. And then the word spread. I started working on some people. But, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And then my mom's yelling, you know, like, come. And on TV, there's this guy, like, bending people backwards and doing the same thing. Yeah. I'm like, where is this? What is it? And they show aerial footage on this small island in the Adriatic, how people are waiting in line, snaking through these tiny streets to see this guy. And we get name. I get the island. You know, I call, there's somebody I can learn from or something. You know, this wasn't a college course, right? And that they could not find him. Couple of weeks later, my best buddy, who was a marathon runner, and I fixed his ankle a few weeks before, he ran over, get it, with a newspaper and showing me an article about a professor in Belgrade who was measuring the energy fields of the body. And like, he can tell you stuff. And I somehow got in, last person, you know, made it. And at the end of the weekend, he pulled me over and he said, look, you were born to be a healer.
Oh, wow.
You know, they measured stuff in your body. You can measure it in a radio, amps, ohms, volts, and whatnot, all kinds of electronic devices.
Yeah.
It's a great, you know, but nobody's teaching this. Don't worry, I have a guy for you. He can teach you. And we hopped in the car, drove half an hour, and he introduced me to Mr. Domanchis, the guy on TV. And goosebumps. And so I learned from him, worked with him, finished college, more like for my parents, because I knew I'm not going to do engineering after this.
Right.
And so I started working on my own. I got to about 30 patients a day when I came to the States for vacation, visit my aunt, travel around, and then boom, the war started right then. And so I just dragged it out a little bit longer, and ended up, you know, as I said. So since then, I have been doing a lot of healing and put in even more time into it. So I published three books on the subject.
Yeah.
I have, you'll see the website, I guess. And I have an online school, online seminar that teaches you everything that I can do. Turns out anybody can learn to do this. I thought I was so special, but I'm not. I can teach anybody in minutes how to feel the energy, how to see the energy, and how to manipulate it in order to balance the energy field. Technically, I'm not a healer. I don't heal anybody. I'm an energy engineer. I rebalance your energy field, restart it. I give the body back its natural energy, its natural state in which it's able to continue its natural function, which includes healing itself. Wow. Now, in some cases, you know, when you have a headache, it's basically too much energy around your head. It takes about 2 minutes to take that energy off and pain is gone just like that. For other illnesses, it may take longer time, may take weeks or months, depends how long you had some issue and how, well, it depends on many factors, of course.
Sure.
I do it long distance as well, not just one-on-one, especially since the pandemic, more people seek me out like that. Wow. I'd say 80% of my work is online. I mean, not online. I go into deep meditation and work on you in Australia or Egypt or wherever you are.
Oh, my goodness.
It works as we were one-on-one. Yeah. I think about it. You know, you think of someone and the phone rings with that person on the other line. Or you get a text message from that person. How do you explain that? Yeah. Coincidence every day, 5-6 coincidences or so many. No, it's all very explainable. And I that's where the engineering background comes in. I like to explain everything through quantum physics and explain how this is so possible. And it's a reality.
Yeah.
Everything is a vibration. So such as this. And then I write your report and see how you are. That's basically how it works. And the results are amazing.
Wow. Does doing this kind of work take any kind of toll on you? Like physically, is it like a physically demanding thing?
As physically demanding as it takes, you know, if back when I worked on 30 people a day, I did group sessions where I would work on one after the other, so it takes a little bit less time, more people around you, more energy circulates, it speeds up the process. Not really. If I'm one-on-one, I could technically watch TV and work on you because it's so automatic. My hands feel that energy already and what to do. When it's long distance, then I need to go into deep meditation, so it's more mentally demanding. Yeah. However, it's actually the opposite. This is actually the secret of a healthy life. If anybody's asking, if anybody's interested in it. So the point is that problems happen when the energy stops moving. Anything that stops moving, a pond starts to stink, right? And the river has clean water. Now, the energy has to circulate all the time. When it stops, you come to see me and I fix it, jumpstart the move. But I don't really give you my energy when I fix you. This is everywhere. It's like the air you breathe in, as if I took a deep breath and then blew it on you, in essence. But so energy comes through me and comes out through my hands or through other means into you.
Wow.
Now it goes through me, right? In that process, it moved my energy.
Yeah.
So the more people I work on, the more energy goes through me, preventing the formation of obstacles and the too much or too little energy areas.
Yeah.
And so the last time I went to see a doctor with a problem was in 1989. Since then, I've seen doctors only as my patients, my clients.
Wow.
And an orthopedic doctor when I broke my leg. Unfortunately, I have to admit that would have been hard to put together. I'm not against them or anything. I'm just saying I didn't need to see one since then. Of course, you can't live on you know, Big Macs or anything like it. You have to have a relatively healthy lifestyle, and there's a lot more to it, and a lot more science gets into it. You can read my blogs on my website. There's plenty of those.
Definitely. So this has been such an amazing conversation. Where can we find you and purchase your books or learn more about this energy work you're doing?
My main hub is my website, www.chongordaniel.com. C-S-O-N-G-O-R-D-A-N-I-E-L. Mm-hmm. And I have many links. I have links to my school. You'll see some free lectures there. You can actually learn how to feel the energy and how to see it just through those.
Cool.
And later on, you can learn how to heal yourself and how to heal others, manipulate the energy as such. You can even learn how to do psychokinesis, actually moving individuals without touching them. It's really freaky stuff, but it's cool. Awesome.
I'm not going to learn how to get rid of my migraines.
And check out my TikTok videos and Instagram. And I have a Facebook page where you can join me every Tuesday and Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 15 minutes of self-healing meditation. You'll read about it there and what to do and such.
Oh, cool. I will include links to everything in the episode show notes.
And if you find my Instagram, there are a lot of videos and pictures from this last trip to Bosnia and Montenegro and such, the Balkans, just this last summer, and get some ideas.
Amazing. Chongor, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
This has been such a treat.
Well, thank you for having me.
I hope you have more incredible travel experiences so you can come back and tell me about
Listen, next to you, we can talk again about our next alpine excursion and such. If anybody wants to come and learn bioenergy healing in the Alps, we'll be there now 2 weeks because the first week is sold out already. So the second one starts July 15th. It's for 5 days, actually, or 5 nights, 6 days or such. High in the Alps, we're staying at a good friend's place. It's a giant apartment, hotel.
Wow.
He was a good friend of mine, Kilian Albrecht. He almost won a medal at the Olympics in alpine skiing. Amazing people, amazing chefs, and amazing seminars indoors and outdoors. Just look it up. It's on the site as well.
Amazing. I'm going to go do that right now.
And try to come on motorcycle like we do.
I don't know about that.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to show your support is to rate or review us on whatever platform you're listening. And if this episode left you feeling like you just had to be there, reach out to Kelly to start planning an adventure of your own. Don't forget to follow us at HadToBeThere203 on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And visit our website, www.HadToBeThere.net. Until next time, get out there and make your own Had to Be There memories.